So right now, I'm very excited to connect with Shelton's mayor, Mr. Loretti, who has been on the show a few times before, but I'm hoping, Mayor Loretti, we can make this a little more consistent. I'd love to have you on the show more. I know I have a lot of listeners in Shelton specifically who would love to be able to hear from you more on the show. So I appreciate you popping on this random Wednesday. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, my friend. Thank you so much for asking. First and foremost, is there anything that we should know about in Shelton? Anything developing? It's a new year. I know there's always constantly things happening. Anything that we should be telling the listeners about this morning?
Well, look, beauty's in the eyes of the beholder. There's always things going on in a growing community, and there's nothing perfect about, you know, any city, anywhere in America or the world for that matter. So, you know, with that said, you know, things pique people's interest differently, depending on what their motivation is, and depending on the things that affect them.
Okay, that's very true. So let's talk about schools, for example. We know across the state of Connecticut, a lot of teachers have said they don't feel comfortable going back into school buildings. They'd rather stay virtual. Now, I don't know if that includes Shelton teachers, but I do know Shelton, like many other communities, had shortages of staff because of COVID. What is the status of school? When are people going to be back in school, whether it's hybrid learning, virtual learning? What's going on with schools in Shelton?
Well, I'm told that they're going back on January the 11th, and it's a hybrid model. And, you know, it's anybody's guess what will happen. You know, there's, again, you know, the teachers have posed issues about their concerns. And, you know, they have to be dealt with because at some point in time, we have to get back to normal. It's for people's benefits, both for health reasons and for the productivity of society. The growth of kids in a classroom setting is so important. You know, it has been mentioned many times. And, you know, we just have to find and work at ways where we can give back and keep everyone safe.
Okay. So how are we doing with staffing shortages? Are our numbers coming back to a healthy place?
Well, I think they are because we've been out since November. So, mm-hmm. You know, people have been, you know, we've had this distance learning and, you know, I've got to believe that most teachers who are in that category that are not as greatly affected as some other people in society have either recovered or are doing well.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit this morning about police. It's actually our question of the day on our Facebook page because we're looking at the police accountability bill. We know that that's something that the legislature is going to go back to looking at and maybe revise it, maybe not. But we had a local officer, a lieutenant, I should say, who came on and said that it's not really ironic that we see Fairfield's police chief leaving. We're seeing now New Haven's police chief is retiring in a couple of months. Shelton has gotten rid of in the last year, I think it was six officers in a matter of weeks. Do you fear, Mayor Loretti, that we are going to see a turnover of good officers and that we're going to be filling those gaps with maybe not the best? Or do you feel confident in the way things are going?
Well, I think that the jury's still out on that question, Melissa. You know, this police accountability bill, I think in some respects has been a knee-jerk reaction. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, we go a little too far because we want to appease people, and that's not always in the best interest of a system that's important to society. Police are important. This notion about defunding the police departments is just, it's crazy. It doesn't work. Just look at the statistics around the country, mm-hmm. at these major cities where crime is going through the roof. You know, and it takes leadership. You know, people are fallible. People make mistakes. Police officers are no different. We spend an awful lot of money on training for police officers, and we should. And, you know, we need to do more of this type of things to bring about awareness. But, you know, the knife cuts both ways. You know, people in society also make mistakes and put police officers in compromising positions that have to be recognized.
Mm. Yeah, I think you make a very good point. So with that being said, do you feel Shelton's police department is secure? Like, do you have any rumblings about Shelton's police chief leaving or anything like that? I think it's too easy to say that these chiefs are just leaving because they're tired of the job and they want to spend time with their families. That may be true, but I do think we're living in a time where, quite frankly, I think Connecticut police officers feel like, wow, we signed a bill and you guys don't really need us anymore. You don't respect us anymore. I think that is in question for a lot of our officers.
Well, and I would agree with that as well. With respect to my chief, my chief is young. He's got a long way to go, so, and he's got a young family, so I'm not sure that he's going to go anywhere anytime soon unless he goes to another department, which is always a possibility.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I know I saw the other day that it looks like Fairfield picked up your a former Shelton police officer. Did you have any thoughts on that, or did you talk to Fairfield at all about that before they picked that up, or once it's out of, you know, Shelton's, you know, control? Like, they got rid of this officer, so it's really kind of out of your hands at that point.
Right. And you know, you would have thought under the conditions that we let this individual go that Fairfield would have picked up the phone and done a little more due diligence, but you look at it, that's their prerogative, and if, you know, they feel that it's not important, you know, we don't feel that way in Shelton.
Yeah.
You know, we have laws and statutes that everyone has to abide by, and we're going to try to enforce them evenly and equally across the board, and not selectively pick and choose, you know, because someone is our friend or someone's a friend of a friend. You know, it can't and shouldn't work that way. And that's not to suggest that people shouldn't have second chances, because I'm a big believer in second chances. I think employers have a responsibility to bring their employees around. I think we have a responsibility to train them, to stay with them, to give them all the tools they need to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to do that not only with police, but with other employees.
Mm-hmm. Shelton Mayor Loretti, thank you so much for coming on this morning. And like I said in the beginning, I hope to have you on more often. It would be great to connect with you.
Well, you know, look, there's a lot going on in this city. You know, we continue to grow. And when this pandemic's over, I think we're just going to break out and we're going to catch the state's attention with our growth, particularly with things that are important to people, like job creation and businesses moving in. You know, it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I'm happy to have these discussions publicly with you.
Excellent. Well, I would hope to do that more often on the show. That'd be great. Mayor Loretti, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So the American Red Cross and the National Football League are teaming up this month during National Blood Donor Month. It's pretty cool stuff. To talk a little bit more about this is Allie Barraza, who is here with the American Red Cross in Connecticut. And Allie, thanks for coming back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, absolutely. So what are you guys hoping to accomplish in National Blood Donor Month?
Well, we always like to recognize our generous donors who roll up a sleeve during National Blood Donor Month every January, because the need for blood, as we've talked about before, it doesn't stop. So in order to thank everyone this month, we are really thrilled to offer those two new opportunities in partnership with the NFL. So those who give during the month of January are going to be automatically entered to win two tickets to, I want to clarify, next year's Super Bowl, which, fingers crossed, everything goes well in Los Angeles. And then in addition to that, if you come to give now through January 20th, come to give blood, platelets, plasma, and a Red Cross donation, you'll also be automatically entered to win our Big Game at Home package. So this is really a neat experience for people to watch the game, the big game this year, safely at home. So that's going to include a 65-inch TV as well as a $500 gift card that you can put towards food and fun. So really a big thank you to our donors who always selflessly give and help save lives. And this is one opportunity that we're thrilled to partner with the NFL on.
Sure. I mean, prizes and everything, amazing incentive to have people to show up. But, you know, deeper than that, Allie, I think it makes people feel like they are fulfilling a purpose. You know, with COVID, we were having blood shortages even before the pandemic struck. And now here we are. And I have to imagine our numbers are nowhere near where they used to be maybe this time last year. I'm sort of out of a ballpark right now, but you know, where are we sort of falling short at this point when it comes to donations?
Right. So when we're talking about donations, we really have our eye on convalescent plasma right now. And that is the blood product that has been administered to many different coronavirus patients that are currently battling the virus right now. And we want to ensure that we can continue to provide those blood products. So if we are encouraging donors to come on out and give, again, a whole blood donation, any kind of donation, but really, if you have, you know, fought coronavirus in the past and you have recovered, we are encouraging folks to come out because we may be able to pull a convalescent plasma product from your donation, which is really essential to those critically ill right now. So our demand has upshot about 250% for convalescent plasma since October. So we are, again, asking those who have recovered to come on out, whether you want to give a direct convalescent plasma donation or a whole blood donation at any community blood drive that is coming up. That's really going to help us identify to see if those donations have the antibodies needed to help those currently battling the virus.
Allie, forgive me if this sounds really immature to ask, or I would say elementary is rather a better word for it. Do you have to, when you go to donate blood, do you specify, like, hey, I want to give a convalescent plasma donation? Do you have to specify it? Or when you go and show up, you know, they will check those things to say, hey, you know what, we could use this or we could use that. Like, do you have to give any specifications when you go to donate blood?
When you go to donate blood, no. All donations into the Red Cross right now, no matter what kind of donation they are being tested for those COVID-19 antibodies.
Okay.
So if they are identified after the fact during testing in our labs, that we may have the opportunity to pull those antibodies from that donation to be able to produce a convalescent plasma product.
Okay.
If you are recovered from the virus and you are symptom-free and you want to give a direct convalescent plasma donation, we would certainly appreciate that. So what you would do in that situation is go to redcrossblood.org/COVID-4, that's the number 4, plasma, redcrossblood.org/plasma-for-COVID. And that is our website where you want to register to see if you are eligible to give a direct convalescent plasma donation at one of our centers in Connecticut.
So when you do one of those donations, is it the same sort of protocol as if you were to go to a regular blood donation, or is it a longer time to have that done? Like, does it look any different than if you were to go to one of the mobile units that's set up in a town or city nearby?
Sure. A plasma or a platelet donation really are donations that can only be done at our facilities mm-hmm. because they do require specialized equipment. They do take a bit longer, a couple of hours of your time.
Okay.
It's a direct kind of product that is pulled. So it does look a little different than, community blood drive where you would show up and give blood. But certainly, no matter if you are recovered and you're interested in giving blood, you may have the antibodies and we can identify that through all the testing that we are doing. And the great news is, if you don't know if you may have been exposed to this virus, we are testing all of our donations for antibodies, so certainly we will alert you if they are present in your blood donation.
All right. Well, yeah, absolutely. If you are somebody who had COVID-19, you have recovered from it, and you want to be able to give back in some way, maybe giving your finances has not been an option for you. A lot of you have said that to us. This is the best way that you could save lives, literally just by sitting down and just offering your blood to someone. So it's incredible. And Allie, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this. Again, can you give us that website if people, especially for the convalescent plasma, if they want to donate, where can they go?
Sure. For convalescent plasma specifically, you want to go to redcrossblood.org/plasma4COVID. And then for all other donations, regular whole blood donations, just head over to redcrossblood.org, type in your zip code, and you'll find a list of drives near you.
All right. Thank you so much, Allie. We really appreciate you coming back on and chatting with us about this, and we'll talk again next month.
Thanks so much.
I am very excited, actually, right now as a mother of a 2-year-old. I know some of you out there are grandparents, aunts, uncles, or parents yourselves. I'm excited to connect this morning with Chris and Holly Santillo. They wrote the book Resilience Parenting, Raising Resilient Children in an Era of Detachment and Dependence. And Chris and Holly, thank you so much for coming on this morning. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. So excited.
Pleasure to be here.
A little nervous.
No, don't be nervous. No, no, no. It's fun. I promise you. I will make sure that you feel nice and comfortable. And I'm just asking, honestly, questions from a parent point of view. Like, that's the thing is, you guys are the expert. I'm just the one, the talking head, asking you questions. So my first question, first of all, is I think this is a very common fear that most parents have. Anybody who has a little kid. I know I have this fear. And that is, you don't want the world to be bad to your kid. I'm going to put it as simply as that. You worry that your child is either going to be bullied, is not going to be treated fairly, is not going to be loved the way that you love them. And quite frankly, that's a I think to me a fair fear to have. But let's face it, we can't be with our kids 24/7, nor is that healthy for either party. So how do you begin the process of even letting go of the fear that something is going to happen to my child and I can't be there to protect them?
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful, wonderful question. Because I think you're right. The fear is very real. I think a lot of our parenting is threading the needle in a real sense, that we need to make sure that we raise kids who don't become those bullies, that they're kind and considerate of other people, but at the same time that they're resilient enough to stand up for themselves and feel confident if anyone else ever treats them as we very much hope they don't.
Mm-hmm. So
part of being resilient is being able to recover from failure. You want to be able to be strong and meet things head on when necessary. You want to be able to adapt when your first plan doesn't work. But in the end, there are going to be times when we fail in life. Mm-hmm. And so while that parental desire to protect our kids is it's kind of hard to ignore sometimes, we have to ignore it on a scale that works for them when they're little, and then slowly work up to the more difficult problems. So what does it look like for a two-year-old? Well, it's, you know, being there in case they fall 6 feet on the playground to catch them. But on the things where they can fall on the ground safely themselves, then go ahead and let them do that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when you have kids my age, it's more like, okay, they really want to make good friends, and I can't get in there with my fingers and make those friendships happen for them. I have to let them struggle a little bit, so that when they get to the serious relationships in life, that they are prepared for what works well and what doesn't, and they know how to come back from it if they've fallen.
So teaching resilience, it sounds like, Holly and Chris, this is something that literally right out of the gate, once your kid, I would say, even starts walking or becoming even a little bit self-sufficient, you should start building resilience in them?
100%.
Absolutely. It's all a process of creating challenges for children that creating situations that are challenging but not overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And if we protect our children from all of the challenges that life presents them with, then they'll never grow the muscles that they need mentally, physically, and emotionally to overcome challenges. But on the other hand, if we allow them to be overwhelmed, if they encounter too many difficulties too early on, then they'll kind of retreat into their shell a little bit. We want to prevent that as well.
Yeah, so our role as a parent is to know when it's time to step back, because nobody's going to be maimed or die as a result of this challenge. Overwhelming is, that's basically what it means to come back and recover is once you've been overwhelmed, right? So we are looking to kind of pull the puppet strings of what the kids encounter.
So talking again this morning to Chris and Holly Santillo, and we're talking a little bit about how to kind of build resilience in your children. They can be self-sufficient. They can be independent. They can stand up for themselves, essentially. They can make decisions and, you know, mommy and daddy or the adults in their lives are not kind of holding their hands along the way, which is very healthy for both parties. Now, I have to imagine, you guys, that communication is a very key part of also building this separation of, you know, staying attached to your child and explaining to them, look, I want you to figure this out and don't be afraid to come to me or don't be afraid to fail. But, you know, I would think communication is a big factor in making this happen for your kids.
Oh, yeah. And we talk a lot about in the book how to develop a relationship with your child as a teacher, so that you don't feel like you're constantly lecturing. I'm sorry, I guess I'm not talking a college professor, but that nurturing kind of teacher relationship where you aren't lecturing your kids.
About college
they're nice too, I know. they're working to ask questions of kids, prompting questions. They're listening for understanding. They're making sure that the communication is good. We get into the book about very specific points on how to develop that kind of communication in your family, actionable things.
Because resilience, which we've been talking about, that we've been talking in a large part about half of it. We've been talking about the independent half of it. But resilience is really having a strong supply of both independence and connection. And connection is, you know, both with your family and with your friends and with your community. And it starts with their relationship with us, with as their parents and their immediate family, and how we can build that. Kind of like Holly said, one of the strongest ways to build that is to behave as a teacher. And every strong connection that we establish, every good lesson that we teach, gives us a stronger footing to teach the next one.
I might go so far as to say that in the early years, it feels like we're working really hard to build independence. And then in the later years, we start wondering, whoa, did I work too hard and create a disconnect between me and my child by encouraging them out of the nest too fast? And we really believe that you can have both. You can develop both at the same time, and you just have to be mindful about how you're doing it.
Something else that I was learning as I was reading a little bit more about these guys is that they've got a background in martial arts. Chris was the founder and head instructor at Potomac Kempo, which is in Virginia, and Holly was a senior instructor. So, guys, I have heard a lot about martial arts being essential for children, not just for their own physical needs and also to be able to protect themselves, but also for self-discipline. Why do you both feel strongly maybe about incorporating martial arts for younger children as they get into their teenage years, even adulthood?
Well, we talked about how we build resilience through creating challenges, difficulties for kids to overcome. And martial arts is a perfect physical experience that does that. In the dojo, you're trying to learn something, and it's a bite-sized piece. And kids get to feel that wonderful sensation of accomplishment bit by bit. And as a result, they become hooked, right? And then you ask about discipline.
Right. And so what Holly's talking about is their physical challenges that then allow them to grow and become stronger and more able. But once we graduate a little bit from just the physical challenge, we get into mental challenges, which then lead into controlling your own emotional state. So we often talk about first you control your body and then your mind and then your emotional state. And it's a very powerful spectrum to move through. But that's all theory. The reason we believe that it works is because we've seen it work for thousands and thousands of people through the years, starting when we were students originally and beginner students, and as moving on to instructors. And now, as you mentioned, we have 5 schools in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and just down the road from you, a mere 4 hours down the road from you. And that's really where this book came from, is the lessons that martial arts teaches are powerful and wonderful for kids, and I can't resist saying also for adults. But this book is really the distillation of the lessons, the non-physical lessons that martial arts teaches. How could we present all of the benefits of martial arts instruction to parents who aren't martial artists or aren't interested in martial arts for their own children? In no way discouraging people from pursuing martial arts, but this book was really meant to offer those lessons to people so parents could play that role that a martial arts instructor is generally plays.
Yeah, you get into things in the dojo like learning, the importance of learning, the importance of service, and integrity. And I think that's where the discipline lies, is you start to be able to assess yourself of when you've really accomplished something to the letter of the promise that you made to yourself.
I love that. Now, where can people find a copy of this if they want to buy it?
We're on Amazon. We're on resilienceparenting.info. And then, of course, we're available for sale on Amazon.
Chris and Holly Santillo, thank you so much for calling in. See, Holly, that wasn't so bad. You did great.
Melissa, you're so kind.
You are so kind. I mean, really, we enjoyed it very, very much. We're saying, gosh, the kids should have been in here for this. Get to listen to the traffic and everything. It feels so live and exciting.
It is. It is live. It is exciting. And I'm so glad you got to be a part of it. And I can't wait for Chase to be old enough to enroll in martial arts. Seriously, I think that'll be really cool. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.